Deezer Originals.
Now, it's time for Strong and Stable.
Strong and Stable, 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 Strong and Stable.
Hello and welcome to Strong and Stable, in the week where Theresa May gave a speech so disastrous, Donald Trump turned up and started throwing paper towels at it. Apart from the Tory party conference recreating every episode of The Thick of It you've ever seen, this week the airline Monarch went under, forcing the biggest peacetime repatriation until Brexit in a year and a half. And there were shocking scenes in Catalonia. Spaniards were surprised at King Felipe's speech condemning Catalan voters. As those who watched it pointed out, nobody expected the Spanish king's position. And, yes, Monty Python pun. And appearing outwardly supportive of my leadership, but no doubt plotting a shameless bid behind my back to seize the host's chair at any minute, are this week's guests. Viv Groskop is a writer, broadcaster and comedian. Her new book, The Anna Karenina Fix, is out. Described as a self-help memoir about Russian literature, apparently when you open it, there's a smaller self-help memoir about Russian literature inside, and so on. Simon Evans, a comedian, once voiced the Fox in a series of beer commercials. The Fox was called Liam and said that Brexit would be easy before howling loudly and going through his neighbour's wheelie bins, which is what we all might have to resort to once we Brexit. And Tom Walker, who is better known as Jonathan Pye, the fictional news reporter. A fictional news reporter being what many on the left call Laura Kunzberg. Jonathan Pye is famous for his angry rants, so it's a pleasure to see that his alter ego, Tom, has joined us wearing a pink dressing gown and slippers with flowers in his hair and surrounded by kittens.
Hello.
Are you going to say everything is lovely?
Yeah, everything is lovely.
That was a proper pink dressing gown voice you did there.
Hello. Is that how people in dressing gowns speak?
Definitely. Yeah. They do now. They have to.
Do you often?
No, I'm going to be sweetness and light today.
As Tom Walker, you just love everyone. Why can't we all be friends?
I never get annoyed at anyone ever.
Right, so that should be great content. for this topical satirical podcast.
I also should mention that I've got a book out as well, and if we could subtly pop that in at some point, that'd
yeah, should
great.
We do that now,
great.
Subtly?
Yeah.
What would you? What's
I
it?
Think we've just done it.
Well,
we?
You haven't said what it's called. It might be called, I don't know.
Jonathan Pye Off the Record.
Right, I'm starting to think the podcast's already drifting away from me.
I've got one out called Turgenev for the 21st Century, in which I try and explore modern-day problems through the medium of Russian 19th century literature. I'm hoping that there's a gap in the market for that.
You massive plagiarist.
I'm going to try desperately to get it away from this shameless self-publicity. And back on to what the punters want from us. And so let's start with the Tory party conference where Theresa May was forced to cough, possibly because Jeremy Corbyn has her by the
balls.
Forced
to cough. There's a bit of Russian literature straight away.
Forced to cough. The conference was so shambolic that Sam Fox and Mick Fleetwood's agents have been in touch about hosting it next year. One for the kids there. Prankster Simon Brodkin managed to get close enough to the stage to hand Theresa May a P45. I was just amazed they didn't spot him as an imposter right away, as he's clearly under 75. But yeah, the prank, the coughing, the letters falling
Simon
off.
Simon Brodkin. I just found that such a tragic interjection.
Did you not think that was funny?
I actually felt, I know there's a whole thing, do you feel sorry for Theresa May? I never feel sorry for Theresa May. But in that small moment, I did, because I thought, this is a security breach. She should be saying, where, as exactly you said there, you know, if somebody is under the age of 75, they're clearly not from my team or my people.
Yeah. It felt like a gotcha. It felt like Noel Edmonds was back. You know when he used to fuck someone's day up by one thing going wrong, yes. then another. And it really felt oddly stage managed. I mean, for the letters to start falling off at the end, you go,
it was
you
like,
couldn't write
You know,
this,
she
you
had
know.
To get rid of the two advisors, Nick Timothy and Fiona Hill. And it's like that she decided, well, I'll replace them with the Chuckle Brothers. And they can start at the conference. And they did brilliantly. I mean, it was, as a piece of comedy, it was extraordinary with
that the letter F fell off. There's no greater gift.
And then she dropped an E. Yes. You know, I mean, everything was an amazing... And as some wags have said on Twitter, I mean, the word country was there. And you were just going, please. It's like hypnotic. Are three letters going to drop out of country now?
If it turns out that Simon Brodkin were behind all of these things had gifted her the Frida Kahlo bracelet, then I take my hat off to him.
What was the Frida Kahlo bracelet?
Viv, tell us about this, the weird weirdest thing I've seen at a party conference.
There were so many weird things going on already. Yeah. And then for me, it turned out the weirdest thing of all, and you see it very closely in the photographs of her giving the speech, because she raises her hand quite a lot, almost as if to showcase this bracelet, very intricate bangle with lots of different portraits of Frida Kahlo on it. Immediately, people pile in and say, Frida Kahlo was a communist. Trotsky? Yeah. What's she, the message
as
here?
As Hannah Jane Parkinson said on Twitter, she literally dated Trotsky. I mean, you cannot be more communist than that.
But I think that that was really stage managed as well. It's like you control the controversy. And actually, if everything else had gone really, really well and she'd done a barnstorming speech... Mm. You know, like how her shoes used to be the only thing that anyone would focus on. I think that that was a really deliberate move to kind of go, here's a little bit of some, it's fodder.
I'm really interested for something. And I really like women artists.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I'm full of contradictions.
But it's like,
yeah,
you know, it's like Corbyn turning up with a General Pinochet bracelet.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like so wrong with her politics.
I have hidden depths.
Yeah.
Yes, they're a bit commie, but never mind.
So you felt sorry for her, Tom, then, with everything?
Yeah, because
No.
Because I'm a human being, and you have empathy, and you—I mean, all you do is you go imagine
There's
being in that situation.
I'm not sure that sits with your idea that she has the level of kind of Machiavellian control that she would deliberately wear a controversial.
No. It's not Machiavellian. I wouldn't say Machiavellian. It's a choice to kind of go. Let's create some debate and discussion about something to do with. You know, I mean, so that we end up everywhere, you know.
The size of it. What about the coughing, though? Because I don't know if you know, there's a sort of actors thing with American actors. And once you learn about it, which someone told me about it, and then I see it everywhere. So when you play like awkwardness or lying as an American, and Harrison Ford does it in his little scene in Apocalypse Now, you do a sort of, ask me a question. Simon, ask me a question.
David, all your tax affairs in order?
Yes, I pay all my taxes. Of course, I do. And American actors are trained to do a little cough or a little catch in the throat when they lie, or when they are
my
uncomfortable.
My 10-year-old son coughs when he lies. It's a real tell.
So I'm not saying that. So I mean, it's rooted in truth. They're very into method and stuff. So it's rooted in truth. Now, I'm not saying that the cough meant she was lying, but it was bizarre that she went, "Well, we will protect the the NHS. the party is united on Brexit."
The thing about the voice, though, is. Her voice is disastrous when she doesn't have a cough. And I've heard Jan Ravens talking brilliantly about this because obviously the impressionist, she has had to master this voice, and it's called duophonic, what she has in her voice. It's where two tones are rubbing up against the vocal cords. And Jan Ravens said it's almost impossible to master and it's nearly wrecked her voice.
Wow.
And it's something that you could fix if you worked with a vocal coach. And clearly Theresa May doesn't want to. So she's especially vulnerable if she goes into one of these, you know, Hillary Clinton situations of I'm under pressure and I feel a bit ill, but I have to pretend that I'm really well and I'm not old.
Yeah.
And it's just so tragic.
Well, is it? Because it worked for Thatcher, the old vocal coach.
Exactly. Yeah. You'd think that.
But do you think that actually, because we're feeling sorry for her, and she did seem more human in a way than ever before, because she was nearly dying, but had a couple of fairly good ad-libs about Phil Hammond giving her the lozenge, and she said, don't get anything for free. I wonder if she should just run with this. Every speech she gives, she should cough, things should fall down. The nation loves Mr. Bean.
Yeah.
This is, I think...
I think she should do all her speeches to the Terry and June theme tune. Bam. Bam, bam, and then it's
another one for the kids.
Yeah, do you know what I mean?
This really is for the kids now. Terry and June is a sitcom from the 70s. Do you think it could be good for her? I mean, do you think it could actually be good?
We all feel sorry for her. I don't know.
I did for about 2 seconds.
Well, that in itself is a
Frida Kahlo bracelet, and I was angry because I thought...
Because it was sold out on Etsy and you wanted one.
Exactly. But no, I thought first she came for leopard skin and I did not say anything, for I do not wear leopard skin. Then she came for kitten heels and I did not say anything, for I do not wear kitten heels. Then she came for Frida Kahlo and that is the end. I mean, it's too far.
I think what it has brought up is that she probably is on borrowed time. You know, it's acknowledged that she's not going to take them through another election. The chances are 2 days ago, she would have been around until we Brexit actually happens. That looks unlikely now. So actually what it does is, so who are the people that are going to take over? And it's rarely the front runners that win it, but let's, for example, just say Boris is up there. And then you look at her yesterday, you go, what I don't think is she's Machiavellian. I don't think she is careerist. She is all of those things. She's not Boris Johnson. She's not. She is... I don't believe she's got bad intentions.
You mean Boris is a naked opportunist?
He's a naked careerist, a naked opportunist. It's never
sorry
about
to
making the
put
world...
the image of naked Boris Johnson in your mind, guys.
And let's have a pause for that. So we really... anyway, we've lost all our listeners, so we can talk about Russian literature now.
Can I just ask a clarification on something, though? You keep saying you feel sorry for him or you don't feel sorry for her. But does that enhance your sense that she's the right leader? Because for me, feeling sorry for a leader is not anything like the same thing as feeling sympathy with the idea that she should remain in charge. Once I feel sorry for a leader, I want them gone. I don't want the country led by somebody who deserves my pity.
So you want a brutal... What are you after?
Well, just somebody who's competent, somebody who sleeps through the night. I don't want to feel, oh, my God, poor Theresa, she's being broken by these people. She must be protected. No, if she can't cope... In that sense, the satire works, because in that sense, you go, well, she's just not, you know.
To be fair to her, she did cope. I mean, the reason we feel sorry for her is because there was an unfortunate set of circumstances that anyone in that position you would feel empathy for. Yeah. It was within that context. I don't now think.
You know, an F falls off the board, you make a joke about it.
Of course. But I don't think I felt sorry for her. And looking back, I go, yes, that was horrible for her. But it hasn't changed
I can't bear to see a woman so incapable of expressing herself fluidly and authoritatively in public, occupying that position of power. Mm. You know, whatever you think of Thatcher's politics, she did a lot for the idea of women being leaders because she was her own person. She did what she wanted with her life. And to me, that is feminism. Theresa May is a hot mess, as the young people might say, but not in that kind of way.
I honestly don't know whether that's good or bad now.
She's maybe a cold mess.
Did you not see the Terry and June episode, Hot Mess?
Tom, you said a very un-Jonathan Pye thing, which was that you felt Boris was, you know, going out for self, and everyone agrees with that, but that she had genuine intentions. You know, she felt a genuine person, which I think plays against a lot of the feedback for I feel sorry for her. No, but this is the woman who sent out the go-home vans, who's bringing in universal benefits, you know, that she's Ruth, who's not really reassured EU citizens.
No, I don't feel sorry for her because of her politics. I disagree with her politics fundamentally. I think, and in many cases, she's been massively incompetent. The idea that she was this really successful Home Secretary.
She was, on paper,
a successful Home Secretary because she was there for 6 years and no Home Secretary ever. So you kind of think, well, she must have been competent. But then you go, well, actually, her record is, no, she was totally incompetent, but she was successful.
She's very competent at hiding her own incompetence. Yes, she was until she became Prime Minister.
I want to move us on from the conference, if at all possible, seeing there's so much stuff that we haven't even touched on that would normally generate so much chat. I mean, Gove talking about how we're going to sell pig's ears to China from the Institute of Literalized Metaphors.
That is the first of their Brexit strategies that I've thought this could work.
Brexit. It's like, yes, Brexit will give us lots of opportunities for the turd polishing industry is going to be incredibly successful after Brexit.
Strong and stable.
So let's just move on. So whilst Theresa May ponders on whether she can make things even worse for herself by calling a snap conference, Boris Johnson in his speech insisted he was fully behind her, although admittedly with a knife in his hand. He then said how Sirte in Libya, I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, forgive me if I got it wrong, how it could become a holiday resort once they'd cleared up the dead bodies. Yes, the Foreign Secretary, our chief diplomat, said something that crass and insensitive just to get a laugh. If only there'd been some sign he was that kind of person before. I mean, were you shocked by Boris's... Had you heard that before, Viv?
My husband told me about that yesterday and I said, no, you're making it up. You're making it up. It can't be true. Mm. I mean... Do we think that Boris has missed his calling as a stand-up? He does try to find the joke in everything. Yeah. And there are stand-ups who won't make jokes about this. I mean, I was looking at the footage of Jimmy Kimmel in the US talking about Las Vegas. He's a comedian. That's his show. He chose
He chose that moment to make
an extremely serious statement because it's not the time to make a joke about something. No. But Boris doesn't know when it's time to not make a joke.
You can't compare Boris Johnson and Jimmy Kimmel switching track like that. That's the exact opposite of what he's done.
But there's something that I'd be interested to what fellow comics around the table feel, but I almost felt sorry for Boris Johnson when he said that. I went, oh my God, I can't believe that he said that. But he is a comedian personality. And you know, as a comedian, you try and push it. And sometimes you overreach. And I remember a terrible thing where university where I made a terrible joke. I was on a roll. Everyone was laughing. I made a joke about my tutor who was terminally ill. And it was... I still sometimes cycling on my bike. I go 30 years later remembering it. And it's just you overreach. So I think Boris is so seduced by his life as a comedian that he overreached. Tom, what
do you think? There are times. There was a thing the other day where he was in somewhere and was quoting Kipling and someone pointed out. And I just sort of thought... Didn't bother me. Do you know what I mean? You just kind of go, this is, he is Oxbridge educated. He's going to be, and he's not going to, you know, it's just him.
What sort of education have you really had if you don't know you can say a colonialist poem in front of someone?
But this is, if you can widen, can I just widen it to Trump as well? Because is it a time where it doesn't matter what you say now?
I think there's a big difference between Trump and Boris. Boris, you were talking about how do the Conservatives get the youth vote back. Boris would do it because he's humorous. He makes you laugh. That's an emotional reaction in a way that Theresa May or Jeremy Corbyn don't ever.
Mog
would do it as well. Yeah. I swear to God he would bring the youth vote in. Trump's different because Trump doesn't have a sense of humour. So it's slightly different, but you like someone who speaks their mind.
Do you think we are too easily offended by Trump?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yes. So, oh, not by Trump. No. Trump's different. I thought you were talking about comedy. No, we're not easily offended. Trump is the leader of the free world and he should watch his fucking mouth.
You heard it here first.
What was the poem that he quoted in Myanmar?
It was a Rudyard Kipling
poem. But what? What did he say?
Well, he knows it off heart. I don't.
But it was basically about, colonialism's great.
Well, Kipling was a very sensitive and intelligent observer of the empire as it was then, Burma as it was then. And I've read quite a bit of Kipling. I don't know which verse he quoted, but there's nothing in it.
It was The Road to Mandalay.
Nothing in it that would offend anyone who bothered to pause and think what was actually being said.
Well, no, but you say that because just simply empire offends. Just the empire.
But if you're offended by a 150-year span of history, then you're going to have problems,
aren't
you?
If you're
what are you going to say? It didn't exist, or everything that happened then was a stain on our national character? Is that nonsense?
But imagine you're at a state dinner and you're the ambassador and you're saying this.
Yeah, it's all right.
You can't say that if you're the ambassador. And he was in the role of the ambassador.
I'm going to go there. Yeah. Forgive me, Mr. Godwin. But there was like 13 years of Nazi rule, so I've gone for the extreme, forgive me. But, you know, that would offend some sort
of... So if you went to a state dinner now and they played Wagner, you would consider
Wagner,
that to be unacceptable?
Not Wagner, but the Horst Wessel song, which was a Nazi song, a specifically Nazi song, or they
but
quoted
Kipling,
from it.
No, Kipling's but for poetry me, was not of but, the same nature
no, but you
as that
should,
at all.
You know, but not for us, not but for people who lived under the empire, maybe it is.
It's not.
Just for the viewers at home, I've got Simon just shaking his head. I got Tom sort of going, "What the hell is going on?" And Viv is, thank God for Viv is quite just tiny little nods of support. They're tiny, but that's all. I was looking around and I got it from you.
But this is it's an N-word thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And speaking of the Russian
people,
Kipling's poetry is not comparable with the N-word, which is spewed out a million times a day anyway on pop radio in America, if it comes from the correct people.
Yeah,
as an absolutely absurd comparison.
But it's about audience, isn't it? And it's about context and whether you have the right...
If you are offended, listen, you're a very intelligent, lovely white male. But so it's not really your place to say whether Kipling offends or whether the N-word offends.
I would not be offended by any...
I'd have to disagree with you there, David. He's got just as much right to his colour of his skin and his gender has got nothing to do with it.
No, but he has. But he can't. He can't tell a Myanmarian or a Burmese person, which in itself is a colonial word, I think.
Yeah.
You
can't tell them whether they can listen to Buddhist poetry now because they're persecuting the Rohingya, or you can't tell them they can listen to the Quran, or you can't quote from that. Which of these ethnic works and canons of literature is acceptable?
But don't you think if you're the foreign secretary, you have to know about cultural sensitivity?
Well, that sounds to me like something somebody would say in a second year seminar about culture studies
people.
At some liberal level.
I disagree all the time that he does offend people. I think our culture is rife with it. People deciding to be offended.
Yeah, absolutely. It's
people choosing
industry.
To be offended, and that isn't offence.
Nobody could even have heard.
I think we are a bit oversensitive. I mean, there are all sorts of things where I'm not with the liberal prevailing wind, like changing the names of places because the person it's named after was a colonialist at a time when, like, they're changing Colston Hall, right? They're changing the name of that because he was a colonialist. Who wasn't at that time? And if you know anything about Bristol's history, it is built on slavery. You can't, it's revisionist in my mind. And there's not a plaque there going, Colston, he sold 600 black people. Mm. It's not celebrating that. He did earn his money through that. It's undeniable, but our country had, our economy was based on it for a while. What are you going to do? Just never, ever do anything of anyone that lived within that time.
So where do you stand on the Confederate flag?
That's slightly different, because the Confederate...
would you stand on the Confederate flag?
I would. The difference between that is the Confederate flag and certain ones of those statues, as opposed to Nelson, right? They celebrate someone who was on the losing side of history. Do you see what I mean? Whereas Nelson is...
So it's just about winners, even if
No,
you
no, no, it's
are...
about context. It's about celebrating. These were the people that were fighting for slavery. You go, well, that's moved on. If it was this guy died protecting this town, although he happened to be on the wrong side, it's different to...
I'm not sure, Viv.
I just love the idea of having a T-shirt that says, come on, guys, we've moved on from slavery now.
It's easy for us as white people to say that. I mean, I'm insufferably right on about it. I understand. But, in fact, I'm going to bloody take a knee now. Me and Viv have taken a knee. Read out Kipling, and we are going to take a knee whilst reading out Kipling.
On the road to Mandalay.
Oh.
Strong and stable.
And now it's time to go over to our favourite Scottish right winger since insert name of famous Scottish footballer who played on the right wing, Lou Macari, I don't know. It's Ruth Davidson.
Hello, Manchester. Ruth Davidson here, made in Scotland from Girders. Someone once said to me, it must be so hard being a gay Christian Tory. And I replied, actually, the gay Christian bit is easy. Now, as you know, I'm a keen supporter of equal rights. For example, I'm campaigning for Scottish Conservative MPs to be treated exactly the same as DUP MPs. So that'll be £100 million each, please, Prime Minister. People ask me if I'd like to be Prime Minister one day. They say, you're everything Theresa May is not. You're sensible, likeable, human. But I say no thank you. Being Prime Minister is the loneliest job in the world. And if I wanted to be lonely, I'd be a Scottish Labour MP. And yes, the average age of Tory membership may be getting on a bit. But I know our great party has a wonderful future. What's that, dear? No, I'm not Susan Calman, sorry. Choose loafers, choose a sensible haircut, choose me as your next leader. I'm like a shortbread brisket. Scottish, but not scary. Bye now.
Ruth Davidson there, who shared her Alternative Manchester Conference speech with Jan Ravens. Thank you, Jan. OK, moving on. This week we saw terrible scenes in Catalonia after a horribly divisive referendum. Thank God that could never happen here. When asked his opinion on Catalonia, Boris Johnson said he prefers Keris Matthews' solo work. Yes, we'll cut that out.
I think that's great.
Do you think
that.
It's a good one?
That's great. Yeah, it's really good.
You think it's definitely one for the kids.
Do you think well, that is, that's more one for the kids?
Just bang up into the 90s there.
Okay. All right. Okay. Yes, nationalism was on the rise in Germany too. Oh, if only there was a German word for taking absolutely no pleasure in other people's misfortune. Schadenfreudless or something, I don't know. And closer to home, UKIP chose a new logo featuring a lion, as lion is what UKIPers have spent most of the time doing. Viv, you're so supportive. Please follow me around.
I wasn't asleep. I literally wasn't listening.
Right, which is, I think, an experience shared by many of our listeners at the moment. While Morrissey ranted that the new leader wasn't extreme enough as he released his comeback singles Heaven Knows I'm Xenophobic Now and This Alarming Man, a double A-side, which is another one for the kids. Now, a double A-side, kids. Never mind. So, Catalonia. I mean, shocking scenes. Tom, okay, are you an expert? I look at you.
Yeah.
You had that look of someone in class who doesn't want to be asked
okay,
the question.
Just a couple of questions. So whereabouts is... I'm joking. No, yeah. No, I'm not. I'm not much of... I don't really know what I'm talking about, but it's as good a reason as anyway for me to get some sort of education on this. So just correct me if I'm wrong, though. Isn't this a little bit like Cornwall going, right, we're off... You know,
no.
Right, we're leaving
it's
now.
It's more like London
Devon,
saying that.
You coming yeah. with me? You know, is it not just a little bit like
it's
that?
It's more like London saying that.
Okay, but it's like, so yeah, I mean,
it
just,
is, it
so
is
it's slightly just
all,
as old.
I mean, because of the police brutality, we all suddenly were very pro-Catalonian independence without knowing anything. I mean, Mazeltov that you knew it's more like London. I have to go and research that. Obviously, that's the most, because it is the most wealthy area, isn't it?
It's the most economically productive, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, do you know about Catalonia?
Oh, only a tiny bit more than thinking it's like Cornwall, but that's probably something. Yeah, there are some interesting sort of sub chapters that I could raise that I've read into.
Yes, yeah. I mean, it's nationalism.
Obviously, partly it's nationalism, partly it's driven. By interestingly, it has been the part of Spain which has been most subject to North African immigration, which obviously to some extent played into the terrorist atrocity there recently, but which is particularly interesting in this respect that they are in favour of independence, those North African people within the within that area, because they feel that once if Catalonia were to be independent, then the North African and Islamic vote within that area would be substantially larger than it is within Spain as a whole.
Really? That
which
sounds
is quite
a bit
interesting.
Conspiracy theorist.
No, well, but they've said that.
What's
on
the percent, do you know the percentage of
It's over 10%, which is... It's second only... If it were to be independent, it's second only to France and Belgium within the European Union as a free place.
Yeah. I love this. It's like a seminar.
Are you worried, Tom? Tom, are you worried by the rise of nationalism?
No,
think?
not really.
No, I love it.
I fucking love it. There's something weird's happened. That the word nationalism, as along with the word populism, has suddenly become extraordinarily a sort of a right wing thing. If you think of it sort of nationalism, small n, it's sort of, you know, pride in your country and a
isn't
you
that
know,
patriotism?
Yes, I suppose
think
so.
Nationalism is different from patriotism.
I think
said the Jew.
Oh, it's all coming out now. Luckily, said another Jew. Yeah. But that's an interesting...
I'm
like
so
that.
Glad
I think...
you. I didn't have anything to say there. Just a little bit of anti-Semitism sort of saved the day there.
I think it always... whenever you're quiet, go for anti-Semitism if you've got nothing to say. I mean, Simon, are you proud Englishman, proud British person? What's your...
Yeah, I don't have any strong level of magnification or whatever. But I would say more British than English, yeah. I don't think of the, you know, England as standing for anything very.
Is there anything? So you don't. There's not times where you feel like I had an experience with a fox actually, seeing as you voiced a fox, where you know, there's all these urban foxes, and there was a moment where it was walking down the street, and you know how with a fox you think, shall I cross the road? Is it dangerous? I don't know, and I didn't, and we just sort of passed each other, and I found myself just going evening. I've never felt so English. I'm just being very evening to this. Well, there's something deliciously English. I enjoy that Englishness.
Yeah. But if that's about culture, isn't it? That's a cult. It's sort of it's home. It's your language. It's the culture. It's the way we act towards each other. Whether that's pride in the flag or allegiance to the Queen, or
are you proud of your country? Bit of a pause, be anti-Semitic.
I'm I consider myself fortunate to have
this is a real Theresa May answer.
Well, no, it's because I'm not proud of my country. No, I don't understand that really as a concept.
Wow.
No,
you know. I remember watching the 2012 Olympic opening ceremony, and there was an odd feeling that there were a lot of things being celebrated, but I thought pride doesn't really make any sense. But I am grateful to have been born into this.
Yeah, that's sort of.
I am
of,
grateful to have all of this, but pride is. Yeah,
it's not quite the right word.
No,
is it?
No.
I'm not proud of my country at the moment because we're so divided, and that makes me really sad. And I think that the problem at the moment is that we used to mostly be in the centre, most of us, and we used to have lots of discussions in the centre, and we could all then listen to the people on the outer edges quite with a lot of interest. And there was, I don't know if I'm sort of getting old, and I feel that just feels as if you know.
I think you're zeroing in on a fairly narrow band of history as being what we used to be. I mean, if you look at the Corn Laws or something, you know, there's a fairly big history
evolved.
Of divisiveness.
I think there is a change. Our country has changed.
Yeah.
The people who said, let's take our country back, have taken it away from us. And there's a sort of like, there's a sort of push me, pull you, we're trying to.
But there are so many things that country could mean. And if you want to say you love it in terms of loving it as against something else. No, I know. But if you want to compare, it's got to be compared to what? In the same way that you say, do you love, you know, this country's politics compared to what? Compared to the politics of America or compared to the politics of Turkey? I mean, there are lots of different places around the world. By which comparison, with which I'm still fairly comfortable with who we are.
I think you're absolutely right.
This is so depressing when we're saying, "Oh, everything's okay because we're not Trump."
No. But I think it's actually a really good distinction. Even Trump, right? If you look at. We look at Trump, it's utterly ghastly. Well, we're in a better position than him. But if you actually look at, you know, you've got Trump looking at North Korea at the minute. OK, if you look at, say, North Korea, you go, Trump's a fucking godsend, and you'd take him any day than rather be there. So I'm lucky to live in a country that does have a democracy that works. And also, I think when democracy is all at the centre, I think it's dangerous. You've got a right and a left. I think our democracy is in a healthier position today than it was 12 months ago because you've got a right and a left.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
At least we're not X.
It's
what made the Soviet Union survive for 70 years. It's a sort of. It doesn't matter how other people are living. I mean, it's
hilarious.
Important to study it. But. I'm not saying that this is like the Soviet Union, but I'm saying that I think we're slightly deluding ourselves if we don't look at what our problems really are and try to fix them and just say, oh, well,
the problems are not that you have a distinguishable left and right party. The problems are not that you have a Labour Party which is openly socialist and a Tory party which is to some extent divided but at least contains voices like Moggs who are speaking out for what are genuinely conservative principles rather than just Blairism in a slightly better cut suit. That's healthy, you know. That's a really good situation for politics to be in. They shouldn't all be in the middle of the boat.
I would like to have a loving sexual relationship with Blairism in a well-cut suit. I just want to put that on the record.
Okay.
I was very happy in 1997.
Yeah.
Well, I think everyone was happy in 1997. It's 4 years later.
You saw what happened.
Yeah. I look forward to seeing you tweet that and seeing the reactions.
I mean, it's interesting in that respect, isn't it, as well, that, you know, we're now in a situation where we feel Boris Johnson is appalling for making a badly judged joke about the need to clear the dead off the streets of Libya before you can start to think about redeveloping it, you know, and forget the actual killing of those people by previous regimes, including your guy, presumably Barack Obama, who I'm just guessing is probably your favourite president of recent times.
It's not either
but
or.
But it
though.
Is. That's the world
no, no,
you
no.
live
you
in.
You can be appalled both by the killing and
the... But you're not as appalled by Barack Obama in relation to the amount of killing he did compared to how appalled you all are by Boris Johnson for making one badly judged joke about it.
And also, I think you made a really good point there. You can be appalled by both. And unfortunately, what we do often is we are appalled comparably about the death of someone... and an off-the-cuff remark that was badly judged and shouldn't have been said. But, you know, someone said something to me the other day. I'm doing this script and people are telling me I can't say that and can't say that and I hate it. But someone said, you can't justify that joke. And I turned around and said, no, you can't justify making a snuff movie. You know, they're not comparable.
Are you prepared to tell us what the joke was?
No, but it probably involved something vulgar and it might have been a misogynistic joke or something. Okay. And you go, right, okay.
So are there times where you'd go, I better not say that because I think it's offensive or, you know, I think it's funny?
I would rare... If someone's offended by it, then...
Yeah, I'm gonna put a joke that I took out of this. I mean, partially because I saw it already been done on Twitter, where it done very well. But and it was that the Tory Party conference was such a disaster that people have said that ISIS is claiming responsibility. I've phrased it badly, but I thought. Because I'm right on, I thought that is a funny joke, and the guy who did it on Twitter has got 5,000 retweets or something. But I just thought I'm going to steer clear of that, because ISIS, they claim responsibility for Las Vegas, and that's a massacre, and I just thought, no, let's not go there.
But that's absolutely brilliant, because as a performer and as a writer, you've made that call yourself, because you go, actually, that's the out of the realms of my taste.
If I'm honest, it did make me laugh, but I wasn't prepared to put it out there, which is what I've done now. I didn't think it was right to put it out there.
And that's your decision, and you've had enough experience to go, I'll find that funny personally in my own home. And I'm getting better at it, because I've caused myself some crap over the last couple of years by going, oh, fuck it, I'll just say it. And then you go, actually, no, it's come back to bite me. But if someone's offended by a joke ever, I would normally tell them to grow up. Mm-hmm. No matter what.
Yeah. Any of the other comedians?
Well, I don't think it's remotely offensive. I think it's quite funny.
Right.
I wouldn't even blink. I would assume the news crews could put that on.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm surprised that anyone was worried.
Well, you just don't want to live in my head, because it's helped. I could make a terrible joke about what it's like in my head.
I think it's funny. I personally would have the same reaction to you of would say personally, but I wouldn't be offended by someone like Frankie Boyle saying it, and he would probably deliver it brilliantly, as you did, David.
There was a bit that I did about women in progressive politics. This was when Clinton was about to take the White House. Sturgeon, May had just come in, and it was about women being progressive in politics. And the point really was, it's like women being high up in politics isn't progressive unless their politics is progressive. But he's really pro-women in politics, blah, blah, blah. And at the end, he makes a joke about bending Hillary over the Resolute desk. And he undermines everything that he's just said. Right. And it was so clearly structured that way, that right at the end, power to the women, power, girl power. But I tell you what I would do is I'd bend her over the Resolute desk and give her one. And it totally undermines it. The shit I got for that. It's a character. He's fictional. And it's satire, so you're shining lights from different angles to try and, and I found it extraordinary. Yes, it's deliberately misogynistic, vulgar, and unnecessary. And it.
Would you not do that again?
No, I do it more now.
Okay.
I mean, there was one a few weeks ago where I said, oh, blah, 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 and I started it off by going, and the liberal left finding offence where there is none. And then at the end, I deliberately put something that you kind of go, they're going to go for it. And they went for it. They all went for it. Oh, well, that's...
Yeah, sorry about that, Tom.
Oh, straight white male privilege, blah, blah, blah. No, it's a funny joke.
Strong and stable.
Okay, just time now for our weekly game of Who Said It? So who said, unmarried men are a problem for society?
Is that Hef?
No. He meant problem in a good way. No, anyone?
Hyacinth Bouquet?
No, another reference from the kids?
Somebody genuinely said that this week?
Yes, it was Ian Duncan Smith.
Oh, right.
The man who, until this week's conference, was known as the worst Tory leader ever. He said that unmarried men were released to do all the things they wouldn't normally do, such as drinking too much, taking drugs, and fathering multiple children. Father of six, Jacob Rees-Mogg, was unavailable for comment. Okay, who said that on the day Labour held a rally in her constituency, she was judging a local dog show and was then accused of being elitist because not everyone has a dog, quote unquote. Mm. Who said that? Mm. That's another Tory.
Mm. Is it Rudd?
Very good. Oh, no, that's the wrong noise.
Ding, ding. Ding.
Yeah. Well done. It's Amber Rudd. Amber Rudd. Amber Dino Rudd. Amber Rudd. Elitist sounds like a gratuitous put down, and the last thing you need at a dog show is a gratuitous put down. Thank you, Simon. You can come again. Okay, who said this last one? Bid to have a 3-course lunch with me and help raise money for Make Noise.
It's good, sort of Boris or something.
It's a tweet. You're quite close, yeah?
It's a Tory fundraiser.
Not a Tory.
A Labour fundraiser.
No, it's...
The new the octogenarian in charge of the What do they call themselves? The Lib Dems.
No, it was
Vince.
It's great to see the Lib Dems having real cut through. Please really welcome on the stage the octogenarian in charge of our party. I can't remember his name. No, it was Nigel Farage tweeted that. At Make Noise is a charity for disadvantaged kids who have suffered in life, for instance, by having a three-course lunch with Nigel Farage. See, that's an interesting joke. You know, I even had a moment there thinking, well, no, those kids have suffered. Should I make a joke about it? But I did. And that's it for this week.
I was offended by that.
Because it wasn't funny enough.
Yes.
And that's it for this week. If you stuck around till the end, well done. That's more than Theresa May's conference sign did. It's Comedy P45s to our guests, Simon Evans, Viv Groskop and Tom Walker, and to Jan Ravens, and actual P45s to our writers, Andrea Mann, Robin Flavel and Dan Bowman. No, not actual P45s. That makes it sound like I've sacked them. It's not good. Anyway, please leave a review on iTunes, Twitter and Deezer, unless you hated us, in which case please leave a review for us on a rival podcast page. This has been a That Lot production. We'll be back next Friday. And in the meantime, don't forget to check out Deezer, where you'll find an extra length, extra strong, extra stable on Monday. I think I can I make it to the end of this?
That was Strong and Stable. We'll catch you next time. Please subscribe.
Deezer. Originals.